Have you ever thought of sunlight like a nutrient? Almost like you could eat the sun. But instead of converting calories into energy like we do with food, humans also convert sunlight into energy. And what if, instead of chlorophyll absorbing light from the sun like plants, our bodies are made up of liquid crystals that get charged by the sun like a battery? And if this is the case, does a lack of sunlight make us sick? Perhaps even give us cancer, rather than the sun, or at least the wrong type of sun exposure, being to blame for cancer, like we've so often been told. Hi there. My name is Brandy, and I'm your host. I am sunlight's newest fangirl, and I hope that by the end of this episode, you'll join me on the bandwagon. You're, of course, listening to This Plus That, a show about connecting the seemingly unconnectable and why it matters. In this conversation, I talk with Carrie Bennett about how humans have a body battery that gets charged up by coherent energy, like the sun, or drained by non-coherent energy, like indoor lighting, unseasonal food, and Wi-Fi exposure. In short, how humans photosynthesize. As a college athlete, Carrie suffered chronic joint pain and insomnia. After her first child was born, she developed gut inflammation and adrenal fatigue. Armed with a BS in biology, a master's degree in clinical nutrition, and multiple certifications, Carrie sought the root cause of her failing health, ultimately finding circadian and quantum biology, which she has discovered is foundational to health and healing. Carrie currently sees clients in her private online practice. She also teaches courses in applied quantum biology as a faculty member for the Quantum Biology Collective, as an instructor at Kalamazoo College, and via her online course platform. In this episode, you're going to hear us talk about how the water in our bodies is structured, like I said, into a liquid crystal that gets charged like a battery by the sun, the fact that humans do photosynthesize, how modern technology and indoor living drain our body's battery, the cascade of events that happen in our bodies via sunlight during different times of the day, and why sunrise and early morning are so critical. Why our bodies are like radios, constantly picking up vibrational data that become our biology. The quantum and biological legitimacy of, manifesting. How the water in our body remembers past trauma, including transgenerational trauma. Carrie's take on cancer, including cells being out of tune. Why you should ditch your frickin' sunglasses, and so much more. Just one thing of note in this episode, I switched over to a new audio editing software, which has this cool feature that helps remove all of your ums if those drive you crazy. But there are a few places it didn't do it perfectly because, you know, technology is not a human. So you might hear some bips and bops that are slightly weird little dips or fudges in the audio, but it shouldn't bother you too much. And I wanted to move this up from the outro portion of the show, which is where I usually mention it, just to make sure you hear it, because I'm doing some slightly new things, and I want to make sure that it gets into your ears. So first, just be sure to sign up for the This Plus That newsletter if you haven't already. I'm planning on launching a community called Ecotone, which I'm saying is a community of belonging and our holy unbelonging, and I have to say, kind of obsessed with the description of Ecotone that I wrote. So I just really want you to go see that. It's on the website also under community. But I'm going to announce more things about that and also offering some creative consulting and business coaching of sorts starting now. And that's on the website also. But I will give all full details on that in some sort of newsletter soon. And I might announce it on the podcast as well, but the newsletter is just always going to be where it's best for you to get all of that detail. You can get signed up by going to thisplusthat.com/newsletter. Okay. All that being said, please enjoy this interview. I love Carrie's work, and I think you're going to be so fascinated by it. So enjoy this conversation with us on the intersections of humans plus photosynthesis. So here is a quote that started everything for me. I read it first in the Circadian app on my iPhone. And it just said, when you eat, your mitochondria decode that information and turn the food into cellular energy. If the environmental cues in your food don't match your environment, it creates a mismatch between what your gut absorbs and what your eyes and skin perceive. In other words, you create circadian disruption. I think I sent this to you when I asked you to be on the show, but I wrote a newsletter because I had been experiencing probably 4 or 6 weeks of pretty bad insomnia. So I was just going down every thread I could find to try and figure out what it was that I could do to help improve my sleep. And I'd been on, listeners to the show will know, I've been on a long dental journey also. So I'd been on my way to getting dental cavitation surgery, and I'd gotten tongue tie removal, and I'd been doing neck and jaw exercises and the whole thing, right? And so I'd been doing work that I thought was probably already improving my sleep, especially my breathing, but I'd been told that I needed full jaw surgery, which is when I sort of put a stop on everything. Apparently, I have very small nasal and airway passages, and so my sleep is impaired by those things. And I was reading circadian because I think I originally, honestly, I came across you and then Sarah Kleiner's work on Kate Kavanaugh's podcast, the Groundwork podcast. And I was listening to Sarah Kleiner talk about that link between food and circadian rhythm and was like, that's wild. I have to find out more about that. And so I think I was reading, circadian is really awesome because it has all the like references that you can actually go and dig into further information on, very unlike most apps that I'm used to. And so I was reading something about sleep in the circadian app and saw that quote about the link between local and seasonal food and your circadian rhythm. And I just thought, hold on a second, we can eat sunlight? Like sunlight actually affects the way, like it's sort of a nutrient. And that, of course, because I run a show that's called This Plus That, I was like, hold on, sun plus nutrients. You know, my brain started sort of making these crazy connections. And so I dug into the reference there, which was a link to a video from Jack Kruse, talking about those links between circadian rhythm and sunlight and food. And I, of course, didn't think that changing my food, not that I don't already eat very locally and seasonally relatively, but, you know, I didn't think that automatically changing that was going to change my sleep overnight, you know, but I got very curious about it. So I started digging into your work a lot more, especially after listening to you on Kate's podcast, and just went down an entire rabbit hole around circadian rhythm. So that is how I found you and have been on a whole just like fan binge since. I joined your Instagram subscriber list and have been just like watching all of your videos and finding out more about sunlight. So with all of that introduction said, I guess I would start with what actually brought you to this work. Mm-hmm. How did you find these connections between sunlight and health, I guess, is sort of broadly what I would call it.
Oh, yeah. You know, I kind of a similar journey, right? Because ever since college, I'd had like issues, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. but I looked healthy, you know, I was a personal sure. trainer, you know, I mean, so I looked healthy, but it was like, why are my joints painful? Why don't I have good energy? Why do I feel bleh? And then after my first child was born, that's when insomnia hit me again in a massive way. And it was this crazy thing of, okay, I'm exhausted at the end of the day, but I can't sleep. So what am I doing? I'm up in the middle of the night. Like, why can't I sleep? Why is my child not sleeping? You know, so I'm on my phone scrolling and like researching, and then just rinse and repeat. I've got digestive
probably
pain.
At like 11 p.m. You were scrolling on your phone.
Or like 2 a.m., right? Yeah. Like after this newborn wakes up after I spend 45 minutes rocking him to sleep. And then all of a sudden he wakes up. It's like, what the heck is wrong? Like, and I didn't, unbeknownst to me, right? I was obviously making things. Now I realize I was making things way worse. And so it just started to really spiral for me. And, you know, I'm a self-professed geek, right? A big old nerd. And I went from like focusing mostly in my career on fitness and massage to I'm going to get a master's degree in clinical nutrition. It's got to be nutrition. Mm-hmm. And nutrition, it moved the needle a little bit, right? It helped a little bit. But I still felt kind of like, wait, is this as good as it gets? And then, you know, you hear the things of, oh, well, you're getting older, or this is just what it's supposed to feel like when you're a mom. And I was just like, BS. Like, I don't buy into that. There's gotta be something else.
Yeah. That's something so real in our society. I feel like that almost everything health related, I feel like, is sort of this common, but not normal. Like, people call it normal, like, oh, you're just aging, or, oh, you just had a baby, or, oh, you know, whatever that is, that, like, oh, that's just part of life. And then when you actually dig into some of these things, you start to go, oh, hold on a second. This might be common culturally, but it's actually not how humans are normally supposed to function.
That's a great way of putting it. That's exactly it, right? And so I wanted to make sure, okay, so yes, this might happen to a lot of people, but does it have to? And one of those late night scrolling sessions was an article by Jack Cruz, like a blog post by him. Mm-hmm. And obviously you're familiar with his work, but those who aren't familiar with it, reading a blog post is like drinking out of a fire hydrant, right? It's just a blast of information in your face.
Especially and, Jack. It's just a lot of things coming at you. Yeah.
And so, and like I was in awe in a way, because I was like, wow, this is so much information that I had never heard of before. And I want to know everything. I was frustrated because I was like, why hasn't anyone ever told me about my light environment before, as I'm scrolling on my phone at 2 a.m. And then I was also kind of angry at Jack, because I was like, you're kind of acting like an arrogant jerk in the way you present this. It was this kind of...
He does have a tone that's a little, it's aggressive.
it totally is. And so it took me a while to kind of get over that. And once I did, I probably listened to every podcast he ever did 30 times. I read every article. And then I started diving into the references that he presented, you know, the research from Maewon Ho, Alexander Wunsch, Jim Oshman, all of these other researchers. And I was just like, holy cow, I got to try this, right? Finally. Yeah. And the application that I started with was simple. It was like, go outside more, Carrie, you know, get into natural light. And honestly, like I said, nutrition moved the needle a little bit in a short amount of time. Natural light and being aware of my light environment really massively shifted things for me, to the extent where I was like, okay, I'm buying into this, and now I have to know everything.
Yeah, I think we'll talk a little bit more too about the sort of simplicity and also the inexpense of a lot of the things that you recommend, which is part of what I really appreciate in the health sphere. It's not just like, I mean, you definitely have things that are like, you can buy 500 things that will help support you, but all in all, the sort of major initial foundational things are very easy and inexpensive relatively. But yeah, I think that was similar to me. I've been on like a 10, 12 year health journey. I was vegetarian and ate largely vegan at home for like 8 years, because I just started realizing how bad industrial agriculture was and got really into sort of that movement. And then my health, probably a few years into that, started just tanking. I was just having a lot of hard problems with digestion, and really fatigue and brain fog and all kinds of things started to become very regular for me. And at some point, 8 or 10 years into that, I had tried truly what felt like everything. I was going to say everything under the sun, which is hilarious. Except for the sun.
Yeah.
Except for the sun. And so I tried every diet, you know, AIP, GAPS, paleo, keto, all kinds of different things, you know, after I finally started eating meat again and what have you. So I was just, you know, I think like a lot of people who struggle with health issues, I was exhausted from the work of becoming healthy, right? And so, you know, I'd been getting better. I think the dental stuff and the breathing really started to also knock off some kind of foundational things to me. I hadn't made it yet to cavitation surgery. Like I said, they recommended jaw surgery first, which really put a stop to which I do want to talk about at some point too. But so when I was in this sort of bout of insomnia very recently and was actually starting to dig into sunlight, I had just moved from downtown. I lived in Denver for many years, and I just moved to Boulder. And it's a very slight shift location-wise, but I'm actually far closer to nature now. I'm not just walking in a neighborhood next to a park. I'm genuinely on a mountain. And so I, in the mornings, had started to, I think even before I stumbled upon you and Sarah Kleiner, I had started to take morning walks because it was so beautiful. And then when I actually made that connection between you and Sarah Kleiner and Kate's work, you know, I started very intentionally being out specifically during UVA, like when UVA becomes present. And I had also, at a similar moment, started eating more beef liver, which is a whole other story. But I sort of conflated this burst of energy with beef liver and then realized, wait a second, I'm actually walking in the sunrise or like sun every morning. And I'm talking within like a few days. I could feel like I sort of came home and told a couple of my friends, I just ran, not very long, but little short bursts on my walk for the first time in probably 5 to 10 years. And I was like, I don't understand what this could be. Like, I thought it was beef liver. Like maybe I was just getting enough vitamin A suddenly, and maybe also copper and some other things. But I realized actually that it was sunlight. And so I started really following that. I started waking up and looking at sunrise every morning. I actually let the circadian app, because it's brilliant and actually moving your wake up time with the sun wherever you're located, which is just amazing. So I started waking up and seeing sunrise, and then I would go on these walks in the morning, and my energy, it was like the fatigue nearly melted off of me, mm-hmm. Which was, for a person who had been struggling with fatigue issues for about a decade, just wild. So one of the questions I did want to ask is that before we get into sort of how that happens, the technicality of what's going on there, is that real? Meaning, was it just perceived? Like, does the sun actually at a perceived level change our energy, or is it just cellular? Which is kind of a technical question before we get into everything. But I'm curious about that, because I did feel like genuinely, even when I sit out at solar noon now, I'm like, I have to work out immediately after solar noon, because it's when my body is the most jacked. I'm just like, now I have energy. I can actually move. So I'm going to stop talking and actually let you answer that question.
No, I love your journey. It's so cool because, and yeah, I mean, it's multifold, the impact of sunlight on the body. Perception, of course, of the brightness of the light in and of itself, it's stimulating. It's supposed to be, you know, that's why our hormones kind of fall in alignment with the brightness as the brightness of the sun increases in the morning. Mm. So yes, there is a brightness aspect of it. You know, there's also this idea of being outside. It's just, I guess, subjectively nicer, right? Like there is that as well. You know, it's just, you know, I'd rather look at the sky and the trees than, you know, a painted wall, for example. Yeah. And so there is that, but like, it goes so beyond that. It's not even funny.
Yeah. Part of what I appreciate, just to quickly interrupt, is that you, I feel, are so brilliant at actually, like, you have the science. And it's not that I don't automatically believe a lot of these things that we talk about, because in my experience, they prove to be true. That was one of my favorite things early on, was that I sort of told people, I was like, I didn't, in one of my interviews actually with Kate Kavanaugh, I talk about how I didn't need all of the data. I didn't need the science, because my experience was proving it. I walked out in the sun and things felt better. That's all I really needed. But I do love that you have such a scientific background and are so brilliant at sort of describing what's actually happening, that beyond the felt experience of, yes, it's nice to be outside, I love that you're actually starting to make these connections between, there is actual science happening in our bodies that's real when we touch a tree, when we're outside, when the sun is coming into our eyes, all of those things.
Yeah. You know what? I really had to dive into that science to convince myself, because these things seemed too good to be true. It's like, is this placebo, or like, is there something legit behind this? And not that placebo isn't a healing modality, but yeah, I needed it. And frankly, these days I need the science to be able to explain some pretty complex science in a way that people can understand.
Yeah.
Because the majority of clients are like, well, what device can I use? What machine can you give me? What supplement can I buy? And it's like, no, just go outside. And they're like, no. And then, so, you know, you have to layer on the science.
Yeah, it feels more controllable, right? I mean, I think that's is it allopathic, the sort of the way that we operate in medicine right now?
Yeah.
So I think we went from sort of, or, you know, I think we're still buried a lot in the Western medical complex, but we took sort of natural healing and applied allopathic methods to it, right? So instead of trusting your gut or moving with instinct or, I don't know, any of those things that might be a little bit more natural, or going for a walk outside, we were like, well, if I take 6 supplements a day, this will heal everything I've ever done. And we're finding that that's actually not the case. People are too complex for that.
Absolutely. And it, right, right. It's like, instead of walking in nature, well, I get my, I get my exercise, you know, I've got a gym membership and I take this class and it's like, no, no, that's good. But no, like just go outside. And I mean, yeah. And so really you're exactly right. It's what I call the alternative model, like the alternative replacement model, right, of instead of this pharmaceutical for heartburn, you take this supplement for heartburn, you know?
Right. It's not, that's exactly right.
It's still not, you know, root cause, foundational. Yeah. And I do. So I really find this stuff to be, yes, it's, most of it is free. Most of it's relatively easy. And it's foundational, right? It's just addressing the body from the level of, I'm telling my body, I'm literally organizing my body and telling it what to do based on the light in my environment. And so it makes so much sense that if light is such a powerful signal in my body, that being inside under artificial light has the potential to be massively confusing, right? And so that's why when we get out into the natural light, the body, it's almost like the body is like, oh, I know what time of day it is. I know exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. And it can like kind of say, okay, ding, 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 ding. And really start almost like the air traffic controller can just be like, boom, boom, do this, do that. No, shut that down. No, turn that on. And it works pretty quickly.
Yeah. Okay. So let's back up. So what felt like my felt experience was truly like a battery had been charged.
Yes.
Like I walk out in the sun, all of a sudden, I have more energy than I can recall in any recent memory. So how is it exactly that are our bodies a little bit like batteries, and do they get charged by the sun? And then we'll go into how after that.
They do 100%, right? And it's an intersection between how the sunlight interacts with the water inside of us. And so that's a really foundational thing to understand. And I mean, I think everyone's heard, you're 60% water, you're 70% water. You know, if you're dehydrated, it's going to make you sluggish, it's going to lessen your reaction time, lessen your cognition. But it's so different than that, actually. It's not about the water that we drink. It's about the water that already lives inside of us and how it organizes itself at the cellular level. And so if you want, I can totally dive into that if you're ready.
Yeah, a little, because you said that and even I was thinking, it sounds like water has intelligence.
Oh, absolutely. Water is consciousness, right? I mean, that's a whole, that could be a whole other podcast.
I do actually want to get into some of that, because I think later I want to talk about not just structured water, obviously, but water having memory and water, organizing itself. It's like an intelligent being almost, right? Sure. Okay. So what is it though? What does the sun do in terms of, so it's, humans aren't photosynthetic, right? This isn't,
no, we are.
We are. Yes. Right. That's exactly what I wanted you to do.
Yeah, we absolutely. Okay. Right.
Because I think, I mean, when you Google this online, everyone's like,
don't Google.
Humans aren't synthetic. Like we don't photosynthesize like plants, and it's not hydroelectric power or, you know, hydraulic power or anything like that. Humans have a different way of doing it. And we don't really take the sun and utilize its energy in the same way that happens. And I'm like, hold on a second, but I just walked outside. I took in sun. Sun did something in my body, and now I have energy. That sounds a lot like photosynthesis to me.
Totally, right? Like, here's the deal. There's bacteria that do photosynthesis. There, every plant photosynthesizes. And all of a sudden then, you know, other living creatures come about, and you think nature would be like, yeah, that kind of worked for like, you know, millions and millions of years.
Yeah, we're just going to do it a different way.
Let's completely change it. Let's kind of just, you know, reinvent the wheel in a slightly different way and see how it goes. It's like,
for the most complex creature on the planet, we're just going to,
It just doesn't make any sense. And so we do. Let's talk photosynthesis. Water receives a photon of light, and it splits the water into the H and the O, right? And that kind of triggers the whole process of having plants give off oxygen and then make carbohydrates. That's the whole point of photosynthesis.
Yep.
And our mitochondria kind of reverse photosynthesis, actually. Okay. But we also photosynthesize, because photosynthesis is the creation of something with photons of light. So what are we creating? Inside of our bodies, we actually create a structured water battery. And it's dependent on light in order for us to kind of charge that battery. And so our body is full of water. Water is inside of our cells. It surrounds our cells. It's everywhere, but it's not like water that sloshes around in a glass. Mm-hmm. It's not liquid in nature. The majority of the water in our body is not liquid. It is liquid crystalline. It is actually structured and organized. So if I were to look at H2O water in a glass, like that I would drink water that I would drink, and I see these H's and these O's, are kind of like dancing around, sloshing around and connecting with other H2O molecules and kind of, you know, just kind of mingling like a crowded party, but like kind of stuck together here, there. The water, when it's structured in our body, the H's and the O's, it's almost like a choreographed sculpture, right? The H's and the O's are very organized and they're ordered. And so they're not just randomly mixing around. They're very much organized and ordered. And in order to become organized and ordered, they create these hexagons. They create like hexagonal lattices of H's and O's. And as they do that, next to any biological, all biological surfaces, as they do that, that actually structures the water and it gives it a negative charge, which is very key here. Because water in a glass that I drink, if I were to measure its charge, you know, going back to chemistry class, if I were to measure its charge, it would be neutral, right? Neither positive nor negative.
So which that's sort of connected to, right, to like if we use a pH strip to test water, that it's like neutrally, it's like not alkaline and not...
give or take, it'll be around 7, right? Yeah, absolutely. So you can kind of, translate pH to the voltage, like the cellular voltage.
Okay.
So the way that we would say it, it would be at negative millivolts, right? But negatively charged, which is unusual for water. And so if you were to kind of count the H's and the O's, you realize that that water is no longer H2O, it's H3O2. And if you do that, like chemistry math, you're like, oh yeah, that is negatively charged. So what happened?
The water in our bodies.
The water inside of our bodies. Yeah.
Right. Differently everywhere. Than just drinking water. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Everywhere. The water in our bodies is negatively charged. So how do we go from, you know, water when it's made, it's neutral inside of us, to all of a sudden it's negatively charged when it's next to all biological surfaces?
Yeah.
They have to kick out something. They have to kick out a positive charge, right? You got to get rid of something that's positively charged. So just so turns out that the water in our bodies, biological surface, you have this negatively charged structured water lattice, and it kicks out a hydrogen. And hydrogen is such a simple atom, right? It's only a proton and an electron. And by size, if you will, the proton is massive compared to the electron. So it has this relative positive charge. So here in my body, biological surface, like a membrane, a protein, you name it, has this negative charge next to a concentration of positive charge. It's a battery. And lots of lab experiments have been able to take these tiny, tiny little micro electrodes and stick one end in the negative charge, one end in the positive, and it's enough potential energy to light a light bulb. So essentially, that's massive amounts of cellular potential energy, if you will. And it's everywhere, right? It's everywhere in our bodies. And so we've kind of been fed a half-truth, legitimately fed a half-truth, when we were told that we have to only eat our food for energy. Yeah. Can we turn food electrons into energy? Sure we can. Is it the only way or is it the main way? I don't think so. I absolutely don't think so.
Yeah. So I think I heard you once say that theoretically we are sort of best functioning if we get a third of our energy from food, a third from sunlight, and a third from grounding, which I'm sure we'll also talk about too. Is that sort of right?
Yeah, it's perfect. The reason why humans had to evolve, or any moving creature had to evolve the ability to extract energy from food, was just simply that. We don't have our roots in the ground all the time and our canopy under the natural light. Like, we're not just stagnant organisms like plants that don't need to eat. Like, plants don't have to feed themselves anything because it's all there. But because we move and we migrate and we can go anywhere, we had to have an alternative energy source, which was the ability then to take food from the, or take food in and extract the electrons and turn that into energy as well.
Probably walk on the earth barefoot also a lot.
Oh yeah. We would walk on the earth barefoot a ton, you know, like, so we, food was simply just an adaptation, right? The ability to say, yeah, I can get energy from this as well. But it's not like we got rid of those other ways to extract energy.
Yeah. Okay. So how does the sun actually do that charging of the water in our bodies? How does that potential energy actually get turned into real energy?
Awesome. That's a great question, right? So that water that gets made inside of our bodies, it's made in our mitochondria, which are like some of my favorite little organelles inside of the cells. And it, whenever that water, that H2O that's made in the mitochondria, whenever that comes into contact with these biological surfaces, it naturally creates that battery, that structure that I said. Mm-hmm. However, there are things that will drain the battery, right? What drains the battery? Wi-Fi radiation. Not continually exposing it to key signals like certain light frequencies. And so one of the main light frequencies that expands that battery, charges that battery, is the range of infrared light. And thank goodness the sun at any given time contains at least 40% infrared light. And so that means every time we're outside, or if we were kind of like living like humans are supposed to live outside all the time, we would always be exposed to this infrared light that would be charging this water battery for us. Hence, we could go through periods of food scarcity relatively easily because we were deriving energy from other ways. Mm-hmm. These days, we've literally, especially in the past 20 years, made our modern indoor environment devoid of infrared, right? We took it out of the light bulb, so it's not there anymore. We took it out of all the screen technology and things like that. Like, there's no infrared, and even our windows, our modern glass, it's meant to be energy efficient. It's meant to block the infrared from entering. So
yeah,
it's devoid.
Just really quickly, so incandescent lights have infrared, right?
They do. Yeah, they're really, really rich in infrared.
Right. So we went and thought, let's be energy efficient, which is hilarious because we're removing the energy from our own bodies.
Right, exactly.
We're being a lot less human efficient, that's for sure.
That's exactly it.
By replacing everything with LED lights. And then our windows, like you're saying, block all of that light and actually cast a lot of blue light, right?
Yes. So exactly. So the modern glass, it blocks the ultraviolet because we think it causes cancer, and it blocks the red and the infrared because it's energy inefficient, right? To have those longer wavelengths in. And so it basically, the light coming through the glass looks very similar to what would be under an LED light bulb, which is really heavy in the blue and green right. wavelengths of light, but pretty much devoid in the UV and the red and infrared. And so that water gets, so it's really easy to understand now that if the structured water battery in my body requires infrared, and if the average American spends 93% of the days indoors, and I actually think it's worth it. I think that's pretty generous.
Definitely during heaviest pandemic times, I was indoors a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mostly 100%, other than walking. That was the one thing, because walking was actually the one thing that we could do that was, you know, relatively safe. Quote unquote.
Right, right. No, exactly. Exactly. And so I think you're right. Over the past 2 years, it's gotten even worse because not only are we spending more of our time indoors, but we're also on screens more. All of us are on screens more. And I'm grateful because I wouldn't be having this conversation. I wouldn't have transitioned my business to this online format. And so I am grateful for it, but we have to recognize it comes with potential consequences. So living indoors really depletes that battery.
Yeah. Okay. So I would love to hear you talk about, because I a lot of these things I know, and for I'm doing this for the audience's sake so that they can hear it, because I think it's, like you said, it can be a lot to digest, and even listening to it, I'm like, I don't even know what question to start with because there's so many places to go that are so fun and so interesting. But I think just for sort of like foundational knowledge, what is it actually in the sun? Like, I would love to hear you talk like sort of why sunrise is important, what happens, you know, sort of during the phases of the sun in terms of what it is to actually be outside in our bodies, like the cascade of hormonal things that are happening and all the other things that are actually being triggered by the sun, that it's not just I see the sun and all of a sudden I have an internal battery that's charged. That's true, but what else is happening there?
Sure. Other examples of photosynthesis, right? Like using the photons of sunlight. And I think it's really important to first recognize that sunlight can be broken up into colors. We've all seen that through a prism, mm-hmm. through a rainbow. And each of those colors represents what we would call a different wavelength of light or a different range of wavelengths of light, because light kind of travels like a wave, and each wave, each photon or each particle of light is called a photon. So I just kind of want to clarify a little bit of terminology there, mm-hmm. but each color it's not like at sunrise, bam, all the colors are right there. Right. And we've experienced that because we know that it's dimmer and then the sun gets, comes up higher in the sky, it gets brighter. So at sunrise, it's really, really key because before the sun hits crosses the horizon, the majority of the light that I am perceiving is of the red and the infrared wavelengths of light. So goes right to what we were just talking about, right? I really start to charge that structured water battery. Mm-hmm. Then as the sun breaks the horizon, the blue light, you know, it's going to layer on, right? You're going to get red, orange, yellow, green, oh, blue. The blue becomes intense enough that all the blue light sensors that I have all over my body, on my skin, in my eyes, the blue light sensors start to get triggered. And once there's that combination of the red and the blue, that is pretty much what starts my circadian rhythm, my clock for the day, right? It says, oh, this is sunrise. Okay. And so now we're going to tell the mitochondria to make pregnenolone, which is this master steroid hormone that can become cortisol, which it will, right, to rev up my day, which is why we have a cortisol surge in the morning. But that pregnenolone then can get ferried into any other steroid hormone. It can become DHEA, testosterone, progesterone, estrogen. And so basically at that point in time, my mitochondria take a snapshot and they say, does Carrie need to make a baby? Or is she under threat, right? Does she need to sleep? And so it's if they think Carrie's ready to make a baby, then it can kind of funnel all of those hormones into that pathway, the fertility pathway. Otherwise, if they think that my survival is threatened, they're going to shunt that pathway and say, okay, no, let's take more to cortisol so that Carrie has added energy she needs in order to flee whatever is, you know, threatening her. And that's sunrise, right? That's when the sun crosses the horizon. And then as the sun gets a little bit higher, eventually, you know, you're going to get the other colors. You get violet or indigo, violet, and then ultraviolet. And there's two different kind of bandwidths of ultraviolet, ultraviolet A and B. Mm-hmm. So A comes first, right? Ultraviolet A comes first. And that's another key transition. So when I get ultraviolet A light into my eyes, and you don't have to stare directly at the sun to do it, right? You're just outside. When I get ultraviolet A into my eyes, that is where I call like neurotransmitter magic happens. Mm-hmm. And it takes things, amino acids, things like tryptophan, and it converts tryptophan into serotonin. It converts other amino acids, phenylalanine and tyrosine, into dopamine, into thyroid hormone, into adrenaline, noradrenaline. It takes a chemical in my brain, this longer protein called POMC, and it cuts it up into any multiple different ways. And that's going to, based on what my body needs, it's going to allow me to either have a pain reduction, inflammation reduction, beta endorphin, right? To make me feel flipping good, like addicted to that time of day. And it all happens from like that UVA light. It's so amazing. So
it's not just like we said before, it's not just perception. Genuinely, these things like dopamine and serotonin and all of this sort of stuff gets injected into our bodies by sunlight, or not injected, but it gets transmitted or turned into these sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly it, right? And the stimulus is the light. So we need that light stimulus. And, you know, I mean, this is probably not so far-fetched because people recognize, oh, well, you know, maybe I've used one of those sad lights in the middle of winter to stimulate dopamine, right? To make me feel good. And so it's the same thing, but like if you get it nature's way, you get this beautiful progression of basically just setting yourself up for success in the morning. And I do find the morning to be key, you know, not to put pressure on people. Cause I know I work with a lot of sick people who are like, there's no way I'm getting out at sunrise, which is fine. So like, just go out in the morning whenever you can, whenever you get up, because there's still a benefit.
Okay. I'm going to interject this question here. I was going to do it sort of rapid fire at the end, but I think it makes more sense here. I have a friend who is not someone who really wakes up before 10 or 11 a.m. She's a night person. She swears by sort of chronotype. Like, it's just not who she is. And argues that, you know, because the sort of nature's progression of the sun is, right, sunrise, UVA, UVB, UVB disappears. So UVA is, you know, the only one present, and then back down to where neither one are present, correct? So she sort of argues that if she gets afternoon UVA, then she's doing what, you know, sort of like all that you would get in the morning as well. So it's just as effective. Is that true or not? Tell me, because no, I keep sort of fighting with her.
Unfortunately, it's not, right?
Yeah.
It's not, because it's the same reason why if that were to hold true, that means that at sunset, we get another burst of cortisol, and we don't. Mm. Sunset's when we start to get our melatonin production to elevate, right? So there is a sequential signaling that happens in the brain. And so unfortunately, and you know, there are 4% ish of people have that night owl chronotype, but like, let's just say I've worked with thousands of people who told me they've had that night owl chronotype, and they don't really have it, right?
Because I've been hearing, like, you know, on Huberman Lab, you know, Huberman's podcast, that he talks about, you know, studies where people have taken teenagers who don't go to sleep until like 1 a.m. and wake up at, you know, noon or something, and within a few days, being in natural sunlight actually completely changes their circadian rhythm.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen the same thing with people, my clients who are tech executives who are on screens all day up and late into the night. I've seen it's very, very rare for someone not to have a earlier bedtime and an earlier wake time when they're in natural light. I've only seen it happen twice. And it's not that it never shifted. These people shifted earlier, but instead of 2 a.m., their bedtime was still like 11:30. And I like people at like 10, like 9, 10.
10 is becoming my sort of max, actually. 10 was sort of my standard for a while. And now, actually, because the sun is going down earlier, I am actually tired, like cannot keep my eyes open past like 8:30 or 9 even. Same. It's starting to happen, which is like wild to me, because I've never fallen asleep that early.
But it's so cool to recognize that that's the impact that light, or then lack of light at night, has on our body. And it also, for me, I know we're recording this kind of in the transition where I live from, you know, fall, really feeling fall, going more towards feeling winter.
Yeah.
And it's this idea that maybe your body is meant to rest a little bit more in the winter, you know, maybe it's okay to be tired, or maybe say no to those social engagements because you just want to sleep. You know, I mean, people, listen, my friends know, don't ask me out for dinner in the winter, like lunch, sure. Dinner, there's no way.
No chance. Okay. We might come back to that. I want to go back though. Like, what is actually different about morning UVA time? Right? Like, what's different between getting, nothing, not just the cortisol?
There's nothing different about the actual wavelength. It's the same, but it's the transition of wavelengths that happens. It's the sequential transition. It's happening backwards, right? It happens backwards the afternoon. So it's the fact that the body starts to elevate cortisol, which is a signal that it's morning, which is why that then when that morning UVA hits, I'm going to rev up my thyroid hormone. Mm-hmm. It's why I'm going to rev up my adrenaline and my noradrenaline and things like that, that things more stimulating, if you will, because of the fact that I recognize that it's morning with that early, that sunrise sunlight and that cortisol surge. So it's just, it's not the same sequence. It's to go from UVB to UVA. It's a different sequence. And in fact, it actually is going to start to lower the production of a lot of those things, a balance, like take steroid hormones and kind of tame everything down, because the morning was the window for us to kind of rev up. The afternoon is the time where we're supposed to, after 3 p.m., actually start to go more into repair mode.
I think when we're outside, even we can sort of perceive those gradual changes, but I think our eyesight is more like, well, it's sunrise and now it's, you know, I can actually now sort of visually tell the difference between UVA and UVB, even, you know, hours, but like the gradual decrease or increase in some of those wavelengths of light is not something that we're actually like perceiving. So it's not like, well, the sun is down and now all the things start to cascade. It's actually been sort of decreasing those things as the sun starts to set, is what I'm hearing, right?
100%, right? So like right now, what we've been hanging out talking for about 45 minutes now. And my eyes, if I was outside, I might consciously perceive a slight change in where the sun is, but literally minute by minute, the receptors, those light sensors on my skin and especially in my eyes are so adept. It's literally that these frequencies are changing minute by minute and I'm picking it up. We got these sensors, right? They're called melanopsin receptors. And these melanopsin sensors, they specifically key in on the amount of blue light in my environment. Blue keeps my time accurate all day long. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, before sunrise, those receptors didn't sense the blue light. And then after sunrise, that blue light became perceptible. Those melanopsin receptors started going off. And like, I call them like these little catcher's mitts, and they're like catching these blue light photons. And based on the amount of melanopsin receptors that are all of a sudden catching lots and lots of photons, that's or less, it tells the time of day. So you start with a couple of them, and then it ramps up, 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 up. You get lots of those melanopsin receptors catching those blue photons at solar noon, and then it goes away. So it's just another way we tell the time to kind of organize when we're supposed to release certain hormones, when we're supposed to, you know, stimulate certain neurotransmitters, all also based on the blue light that's in my environment.
We're living in environments now, though, that have blue light cast on us constantly, right? Like you said. So we've sort of disrupted a lot of that, not just by taking away incandescent lights and replacing them with LED or, you know, energy efficient windows, but also that we're looking at screens all day, which emit a lot of blue light, right? So that's sort of the thing that's our internal clock, which is like those receptors, like you were saying, that were catching all those blue light, that blue light is now being told all day that it's the same time of day. Is that right?
That's exactly it, right? Because light from the sun varies continuously, and light that's coming from an artificial source, whether it's a screen or a bulb, it's the same amount of blue all the time. Yeah. So basically being inside all the time, I think it's one time of the day, right? It doesn't change. It's very, very dysregulating to the circadian rhythm, because it's like, it's saying it's always 2 o'clock. It's always 2 o'clock. It's always 2 o'clock, or whatever, you know, whatever the blend of blue, artificial blue happens to be telling this. There's a clock in my brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. Mm-hmm. And it's continually trying to interpret the time of day based on those blue photons. And if it's getting that signal and it's staying the exact same, it's so confusing to that suprachiasmatic nucleus and that clock in my brain. And that just kind of has such a cascading dysregulatory effect throughout the body.
Yeah. Okay. So this is what I want to talk about, is that the rhythm, I think, of that, right? So we're talking about wavelengths. And I think just in general, like, there's a thing with humans where, like, if we can't actually tangibly perceive it, we kind of don't think it exists, right?
Oh, for sure.
And so I think the way that I thought of circadian rhythm for most of my life was just sort of like I don't know, it's like when I go to sleep and when I wake up. I didn't really think about it too much beyond that, you know, and disrupting it, I thought, you know, I don't know. It just felt so, I don't know, detached from me. It didn't feel like something that like genuinely changed my health. It just felt like, well, I guess, you know, I should sort of wake up and go to sleep at around the same times. And I think especially when I started, I actually also developed like thyroid issues, or my guess is that it's not actually thyroid issues. It's other things that are affecting my thyroid from what I can tell. But nonetheless, I was having thyroid related issues. I started thinking a little bit more about, you know, like waking up at a similar time and going to sleep at a similar time, because it's, you know, it tends to be pretty good for you from what I had heard. But it just, yeah, it consciously, it just didn't feel like it really affected my life very much. And I think I've gotten really very interested. I don't even know how to articulate this in a way. So I'm just going to ramble at it a bit and see if I can get there. Because it, when I listen to your stuff, and I think I've made some other connections through other things, I started to realize, actually, I think there was one distinct morning I was sitting outside watching sunrise, and my sleep had started to change, all this insomnia I was experiencing. And I was like, circadian rhythm, like we actually call it a rhythm. It's like a wavelength, like almost like we'd think of audio, right? Like it has like amplitude. And if we're out of rhythm, anytime we talk about being out of rhythm with anything in our lives, it's a discordant wavelength, right? It creates a discordance. And I started to sort of piece all these things together that was like, you know, the indigenous way of talking about being in alignment with nature, right? And I felt like all of a sudden when I was sort of tending to my circadian rhythm and I was walking outside and I was getting in nature more, that it wasn't, again, it was just like these indigenous ideas all of a sudden became scientifically provable, right? That like we, like for millennia, people have intuited this knowledge, but that all of a sudden it wasn't just some metaphor. It was quite literal. It was like, I am actually becoming more in tune or in proper rhythm with nature and with the sun and with my, you know, sort of all of the rhythms that I think we sort of abide by in human life. And it started to sort of occur to me, like, that discordance actually is something that happens in our bodies too, not just sort of what we've been talking about, but like something, I don't know, I'm trying to formulate a question that's somewhere around, like, you're talking about positive and negative charges. And I'm wondering if somewhere like in our bodies, there's actually this sort of like literal sort of amplitude, like a wavelength that happens, that like literally being in like tune with the sun actually starts to create synchronous rhythm. Certainly. That keeps us healthy.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
100%. And absolutely. And I also, and I'll explain how in a second, but I also want to highlight that light is one rhythm, but the Earth's magnetic field changes throughout the day. That's another rhythm. Mm-hmm. The oxygen that's being produced by the plants, that's another rhythm, right? We got a lot of rhythms we're working with throughout the day that we're kind of syncing our body to. Mm-hmm. And the one that we perceive the most, it's called our primary Zeitgeber, or time giver of the body, is the light. And so interestingly, right, we think of the body as working on chemicals, but it's everything works on what's called oscillations or wavelengths or rhythms or vibrations, you know, frequency, right? We call it so many different things. So vibrations. And so the way that once I get that signal of the blue photons, you know, into my brain, to that timekeeper in my brain, the way that that timekeeper in my brain tells the rest of my body what's happening is via oscillation, via vibration. It sends literally a vibrational signal that syncs up all of my cells to that time. Mm-hmm. Yes, we talk about negative charge. We talk about protons, electrons, but nothing in the body is stagnant. Nothing is ever still. Everything is moving. Mm-hmm. And all moving charges also produce vibrations, right? They produce wavelengths and oscillations that can be measured. I mean, it's kind of weird, but like, actually, if I were to give someone who's a chemist, right? I'm going to give a chemist, here's a glass. This looks like clear water, right? But I took it out of this random pond, right? Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what chemicals are in it? And the way they would tell what chemicals are in it are based on what's called the resonant energy, right? Uh-huh. Each chemical has its own unique vibration. So it's going to match up the vibrations. So we're just a bag of vibrations, basically, which makes sense then if I'm trying to tune into other wavelengths and vibrations in my environment. It's like a tuning fork effect, essentially, right?
That's a better title for this episode. I'll just call it a bag of vibrations.
You are a bag of vibrations. Have fun with that. Yeah. But that's what it is, right? Everything is moving and we're continually keying in and trying to tune our body up to the right vibrations, good vibrations. You know, I mean, all this lingo, you know, this music that we've had, or these sayings or things, they come from something. They are there for a reason. And yes, absolutely. We are bags of vibrating molecules and subatomic particles, and we need the vibrations from nature to sync up.
Yeah. So this is where I want to go to, because I want to get a little bit weird, because I don't know. Weird is the, I don't know. I feel like I've heard you talk about this too, that it's like all the like woo woo, like thing we talk about all the time, like actually have some foundational merit to them. Like you said, like they're coming from somewhere. And so I think we're starting to make these actual connections between things that, like I said, like we've intuited for millennia, or like even like new agey stuff has started to sort of like put different language around, that people have always thought like, okay, well, like eye roll, you know, those are ridiculous. You're just being, it's unscientific. It doesn't make any sense. Like I can't actually get behind that. But we're actually starting to see that those have some scientific merit. And I was listening to one of your subscriber videos on Instagram where I heard you say, like, I think it was every one molecule of something else we have in our body, we have 99 molecules of water. And, you know, like vibrations or sound waves or light waves or what, they're data, right? Like waves carry data. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why going back to information. So going back to that first quote I said that sort of got me into this rabbit hole about food being, like Sarah Kleiner said in Kate's podcast on her show, food is data, food is light. And I was like, hold on. Okay. So now we're making connections again, how food actually carries wavelengths or these vibrations. So it's data. So again, it's not just that eating locally and seasonally is really nice and it supports your local agriculture and whatever, but it quite literally carries, I might say this wrong, but like wavelengths of data that are telling your system internally what time it is during the day also, along with a lot of other things. But that's why when we eat food that is out of rhythm with our local system, our local environment, that all of a sudden the sunlight that we're getting in our eyes and on our skin and all of these things is a different one than we're receiving by our food. So then all of a sudden that's a discordance of vibration. So they're creating an unnatural rhythm, right? And so similarly, like I was just thinking about how, like, you know, so water is an energy conductor. This is what we're talking about, right? Like the our bodies are batteries because we're a water battery that's charged by the sun. And in physics, like I got really into quantum physics a while ago. And again, it's one of those things quite like this where I'm like, I can intuit it. Like I'm someone who can't tell you the science. Like I do not repeat the science back to you very well, but like in my body, I can feel it. Like it resonates with me. So it makes sense to me. In physics, like there's the nucleus, but it's mostly the energy around it, right? The electrons. It's an electron cloud. So we are more energy than we are mass, basically. Mm-hmm. Like these, absolutely. All of this like vibration, right? So all of these things that you hear like New Age people talk about in terms of like law of attraction and how we attract things to us and these our bodies are actually tuning forks. That it is like basically quite literal that we are tuning forks that resonate or don't resonate with certain things. And in that, like we can feel a resonance or a discord with certain people, with certain things, with work that matters to us and all of these things and our lived environment. So the sunlight and nature or non-native EMFs that start to create some of this discord. And I think we're starting to see like quite literally how when we're out of tune with all of these things, when we're not doing work that brings us more life, which I think is like actually more amplitude, right? They're higher waves of amplitude that we experience when we do stuff that like literally, like I say all the time, when we do work that makes us come alive, it's literal. Like there is actual stuff that we do that we engage with that brings more energy into us or drains energy out of us. I think the same way that the sun works in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, that we truly are in or out of tune with the things that bring us life, and when we are, those things actually bring us disease.
Absolutely. I mean, you've really, I like how you kind of intuited all of that and brought it all together. And the I guess underlying thread, which we kind of alluded to earlier, is that water network in our body isn't just a battery. That water, when it's structured in that format, it's called a liquid crystal.
Yeah.
Right. Liquid crystals in physics. Now, this is not woo, right? But liquid crystals in physics are receivers and transmitters of frequency, of energy, right? And that data, that information. And so if you think about it, and what's fascinating is that water is structured as a liquid crystal. But if you were to take like a cross section of muscle, you would see it is very much ordered like a liquid crystal. If you look at the structure of a cell membrane, it is a liquid crystal. So we're basically fractals of liquid crystalline structures in our body. So we're just a big bunch of liquid crystal, which means we're very, very capable of both receiving the energetic frequencies in the environment of our environment and also transmitting electromagnetic frequencies or other frequencies, you know, sound, emotion. I consider them all part of the electromagnetic spectrum, if you will. They're all on the spectrum of frequency. And so you're exactly right. We are just like if I were to have a radio here, you know, sitting on my shelf, and if I were to tune it to a certain station, doesn't look like there's anything around me, but all of a sudden it would pick up the football game, the rock song, the country song, right? We are doing the same thing. Our liquid crystalline body is continually doing the same thing and then interpreting those frequencies into some sort of a biological effect. Is that frequency helping me appropriately resonate structures on my cell membrane, right? That's the work of Bruce Lipton with, you know, this biology of belief. Like, am I in an environment where I feel love and support and joy? And is it really allowing those receptors to kind of create a beneficial and healthy physiological cascades? Or am I in a jarring environment? Am I putting my cell into like a cell danger response, kind of a contraction? It's all tuning into the frequency, ultimately. One of those frequencies, not one, but like one range of those frequencies is the visible light that comes from the sun, plus the infrared and ultraviolet. But that makes up like literally less than 1% of the potential frequencies that are around me. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, frequency matters, vibration matters. And so if we can kind of think at that level, am I surrounded by things that are harmonious mm-hmm. to my body, in training my body to, you know, beneficial sounds, or am I continually in negative, you know, degrading frequencies, jarring frequencies, whether it's emotions, thoughts, literal sounds? There's research that shows that, like, if you live or work next to a construction site for long periods of time, mm-hmm. it's detrimental to your health. It's because that's frequency, right? And you're continually picking it up. So I mean, I just kind of rambled there, but like,
no,
I think
it's great.
That's really foundational.
Yeah. I sort of rambled weird things at you too, that hopefully made some sort of, again, coherent, pun intended, sense. But yeah, I mean, it's like everything we can think of, like why some music makes us feel more energetic, or like makes us feel sad or depressed, or it actually has signals that are talking to our body and are either like, you know, discordant or harmonious, like you said. And I think even, you know, I've been sort of digging into the work of Joe Dispenza also. I don't know if you followed any of Joe's work, but
sure.
Yep. Some of the stuff around neurology and also like our heart. So like brain waves and heart, you know, like the heart pounds, it's also beating in rhythm also. And so what happens when you actually connect those things in harmony, like when your thoughts and your heart are actually beating in resonance together, and how that actually attracts, I don't want to keep using the word attract. I think it gets a little bit messy if I start talking about like literal law of attraction things. But like, I think nonetheless, like those things are all, they are wavelengths of certain kinds that are, or frequencies of certain kinds that are or are not beating in rhythm, I think, with other things around us.
Absolutely. You know, and this is going to sound way out there for people, and we don't have to dive into it because it's probably too complex even for me to want to break down right now. But like, there is no time. Time is like all that ever was and ever is and will be is in the present, which is, it's a really bizarre concept, right? Like, and so, you know, you can look into all that. People can look into that if they want to dive into it, but it's why the work of Joe Dispenza and this, the law of attraction and this concept of manifestation, it's why there's legitimacy to it. It's mm-hmm. because I'm not just a victim of my environment, right? I actually can consciously influence where I'm going in my future by my thoughts, by my actions, by my feelings, especially like you said, when the thought and the feeling are coherent, that is just like this amplification of a frequency mm-hmm. that then draws me to my reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And our hearts, I think I've heard him say, like, I might get this wrong, but like our hearts actually send out a signal like 8 feet beyond us. Like our energetic fields. Yeah. That's what I thought. I was like, that has to be shorter.
20. It can be by the most, and that's just measured by the most sensitive device we have. I think it's because our devices aren't sensitive enough to recognize that literally our hearts feel that probably is. Right. Exactly.
Right. And so I actually do want to, so roll with me a little bit on that. Cause I do think that's actually fascinating. Cause I've been into that a lot recently because I think, you know, we can make fun of it all we want. Like I said, like I think people give it a hard time, and law of attraction stuff has gotten a bad rap. And I do think that there are certain things about that don't like sort of acknowledge the reality of poverty and like all of these things that actually like are interacting with the energetic fields that we're like, that's part of it too. It's not just like think your way into having a nice car.
Right.
I do think that the like real scientific basis behind that is like actually starting to prove itself out. Like you're saying that you know, and that's the word he uses, is coherence. And we create coherence between our thoughts and our hearts and, you know, those waves that are happening there. He also talks about it like a battery. Like if the heart is beating out of dissonance, that the battery isn't getting the sort of like, I don't know, I think he measures something like negative charge at your feet and positive charge at your head. So also talking mm-hmm. about like the energetic field between your body, and life is a little bit more like we perceive time as an arrow drawn on a piece of paper, but time is actually the piece of paper. Like it's sort of happening everywhere.
That's a really good way of putting it.
So yeah, our physical cells, like the sort of data that we're getting from that, those frequencies don't know the difference between now and later. Time is actually sort of non-existent. It's just a perception, a limit. Yeah, I do think that that's super interesting in terms of like, I think that's just where I've been, is like, I got really geeked on hearing you talk about like how we're mostly made of like energy and, you know, like how the sun puts us in rhythm with all of these things and like all these other things, like you're saying, like music or construction or where we live or the people we surround ourselves with or the food that we eat or the non-native EMFs that we're around. So if we're sitting by a Wi-Fi router all day, all of these actually are quite affecting of the frequencies that happen in our bodies. And Kate and I had a podcast interview together and we were talking about the sort of realization that like cancer is basically when your cells stop talking to each other. It's when data stops flowing from one cell to another, basically. And so it also is like, it's like a disease of discordance, right? That like we get out of resonance with the things around us and we actually get sick. And I would actually love to hear you talk about that. Like how it is that I don't know, your own take on that, I guess, how we get sick when we're out of tune with these things.
You know, when we, in a couple of, there's a couple of different ways, right? And there are so many things that can change either our liquid crystalline water antenna, right? So anything that depletes that structured water inside of us can change cellular function. And then anything, frequencies that have the potential to be disharmonious can also impact that. And that includes like the water and water memory, that includes why there's an association between childhood trauma and disease, mm-hmm. why there's like transgenerational trauma, right? That uh-huh. I think is a legitimate thing because of the water memory that we store. Mm. But, you know, let's speak on cancer, for example. Just in and of itself. So what happens with cancer is those mitochondria that we stop, the cancer kind of hijacks the mitochondria or stops the mitochondria from being able to make water. So the mitochondria get this signal of basically there's a danger response. And anytime the cell experiences a danger response, the mitochondria have to do other things, right? Like typically with danger, there's an inflow of calcium into the cell. That calcium is a positively charged ion. So it changes that negative charge of the cell. It can start to destroy that structured water. Anytime that happens, the cell reverts to an old school metabolism, a survival metabolism, Warburg metabolism, which is in the cytosol, not in the mitochondria, in the water, if you will, the structured water of the cell itself, mm-hmm. which changes then the ability of the cell to make more water, right? That actually produces tons of reactive oxygen species, tons of inflammation and damage. The reactive oxygen species it's light signaling. So in a normal cell, you're releasing little bits of light. They're called biophotons. And in a cell that's cancerous, now you're releasing tons of biophotons. And it just so turns out, it just so happens that those biophotons communicate to the DNA to express different things and mm-hmm. communicates outside of the cell, the status of the cell. Yep. And so when all of a sudden you shift the metabolism, when there was a stressor that shifts the mitochondrial metabolism from the mitochondria to the cytosol, this kind of ancient metabolism, you change gene expression, which is why we've associated genetic changes with cancer. It's not the first thing that happens. It's kind of a downstream effect. But then it also changes the environment of the cell, right? So so that's why we hear, oh, well, you know, cancer likes acidic environments. Well, that water, that negatively charged water, the alkaline. So we're destroying that, right? So we're making the environment more acidic. It's my take on it. And there's a lot of things that can cause that cell danger response from legitimately having something like non-native EMFs, Wi-Fi radiation, opening the calcium channels and allowing that to pour into the cell, to infection, right? Mm-hmm. Infection can also change that. So a chronic infection to even just trauma, right? An acute trauma, a chronic trauma can do the same exact thing, which is why you can see cancer happening from so many different angles, but the mechanism is really the same. Mm-hmm. You're destroying that structured water network. You're kind of getting that cell then out of tune, and you're allowing it to then create more chaos in its tissue, which basically causes it to, you know, allow to be allowed to grow unchecked and kind of spread in the tissue.
Yeah. I've been reading, so I think that connects too, again, to Joe Dispenza's we're talking about, like the sort of turning on or turning off certain gene expressions, like that most disease actually isn't rooted in genetics. It's rooted in, like we're talking about, sort of how those genes get expressed based on all the environment that we sort of put ourselves in. And then I've been, I'm almost done reading Gabor Mate's newest book, The Myth of Normal. I don't know if you've read it at all.
I've not read it yet. No, but
phenomenal. But I think that's the thing that's so exciting to me. And I think why it makes so much sense that the field that you work in is called quantum biology, that I think that there's something about this quantum field that is actually starting to make these connections between, like, again, the sort of like intuitive knowledge that we've had forever and the scientific knowledge of what we know now about generational trauma and how trauma gets stored in the body, like, you know, and all the somatic work that we've started to get into, that it's starting to like sort of go, like, we've started to realize that, like, yes, we hold trauma in our bodies, but it's not just that, like, our genetics sort of determine what happens once that trauma happens. It's that, like, all of these, like, sort of energetic fields change the expression of what's going on in our mitochondria and our, at a cellular level, so that then disease gets turned off or on. And I think that's why, like, I mean, I guess it was, I don't know, 5 years ago, I feel like quantum physics started to, like, really have a heyday. Like, just mm-hmm. culturally, people were starting to just, like, freak out about, like, you know, an electron can be here and it can be over here and, you know, hop from one place to another without traveling the distance in between, like all of those sorts of things. And then, you know, I think, I don't know, it just feels like culturally you're sort of seeing this story of, like, how we're starting to, like, come across this knowledge. And I feel, you know, like that we're getting into somatics and fascia and, like, realizing how important fascia is in your body. And, you know, like that water stores memory and that, like, your tissues store all these different things and also calcify, or, you know, how trauma makes our fascia calcify and all this sort of stuff. And so we're starting to see it, like, in wellness fields, but then all of a sudden we're starting to make these connections, I think, through the quantum field, which is realizing that, like, all of this is true, but the connection between all of it. And I find it sort of fascinating. I'm going to say something that I don't know if I actually stand behind, but, and is sort of a big thing to say, but I think you alluded to it at least a little bit, which is that, like, you know, I think in quantum physics, in physics in general, that they've been spending years trying to find this connection between general relativity and quantum physics, that, like, you know, our world doesn't work at the smallest scale in the same way that it works at the largest scale. And they're trying to find, as science does, like, they're always trying to find the one unifying thing underneath it all. And I think, like, weirdly with health, like you said, in a certain way, at least, and I'm maybe projecting onto that, but, like, that mitochondria health and, like, energetic fields and this, like, sort of being a bag of vibration is actually the root of all health, that, like, disease actually stems from, and Gabor Mate talks about this, that, like, it's mostly your environment. Like, it's not just the genetic code. Like, I think he says something like four, like you said, even, what was that earlier? 4% of people have a chronotype that's, like, out of that rhythm. But, like, something like 4% of people actually have real genetic problems. The rest is perceived as genetic often, but is actually the environment that turns on or off these genetic signals that, or codes that signal disease or health to us. And so I do think it's, like, really fascinating to think about. Like, I think I've started to think about my health in a way that's, like, not just what am I eating and is that healthy? Does it have the right amount of calories or not? It's more, is this in tune? you know, like, does this actually resonate? Does this create harmony in me? And also why I think, like, the work of Joe Dispenza and so many other people that are talking about your emotional state actually deeply matters, like who you surround yourself by and what you're thinking every day and why things like affirmations or whatever, you know, like what, how our subconscious works. And I think it was Joe actually heard the other day say something like, your body is actually the, your subconscious. Like, so our conscious works in our thought level, but your body is actually sort of a manifestation of our subconscious, that like these things like trauma and everything that live in our bodies actually create what the mass of our bodies look like, how they manifest. And now I'm just rambling at you, but I just think that, yeah, it's so fascinating. It feels at least somewhat like we're getting to some sort of underlying cause of disease in the world. And then it does have something to do with quantum in the sense that it's energetic.
Yeah, it's energetic. Absolutely. I that's really what drew me to this and has kept me here, because I can connect all the dots between what has worked for me partway in the past. Like you said, nutrition, exercise, a specific supplement, to the fact that it's changing things at that quantum scale.
Right.
And so that's where I'm becoming obsessed with how can I influence it at the quantum scale beneficially, and what influences in the other way negatively at the quantum scale. And so it's a really interesting frame of reference, because it's not what's good, what's bad. Like you said, it's like what brings me into resonance or what takes me out of resonance, what supports the structured water network in my body or what destroys the structured water network in my body. There's a couple of key questions that I have to ask. What strengthens my circadian rhythm? What disrupts my circadian? And once I had those questions and that frame of reference, it became a lot easier to just kind of shape my habits, shape my day. What does my day look like? What am I going to place more emphasis on versus what did I kind of drop and leave behind that I don't really care about anymore?
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting part of my healing journey. And I really enjoy talking about this with you, with my clients, because it's made it easier for me to kind of not think about like what protocol is right versus no, let me take a look at my day and understand how these things are influencing my body. And then I can be the judge of what's good, bad, what goes when and how long and if at all.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So let's see. I, on my morning walks, have become like, I just want to start wearing a t-shirt every morning that says ditch your sunglasses.
Thank you.
Can you give just a super brief 2-minute spiel about why it's so important? Like, I think because we didn't talk about necessarily like the eye versus the skin, right? And how we might be blocking some of that in both our like our contacts, our sunglasses, and all of those sorts of things when we're outside walking.
Well, you know, when it comes to circadian rhythm and receiving the light signals, the eyes are by far the most concentrated source of those sensors. Mm-hmm. And so while our body has the sensors, it's the eyes. And in any natural setting, like, you know, if I was living 1,000 years ago, my eyes and my skin would have felt and seen the exact same signals. And these days we create a mismatch. Out of resonance, right? We create a mismatch because of the fact that I'm covering my eyes. I'm literally blocking all the UV and the brightness, because the brightness matters too.
Yep.
My skin is receiving a certain signal. My eyes are telling my brain it's a different thing. Again, mismatch, circadian mismatch. Or, you know, I just tell people, it's like, would you, since we're photosynthetic, would you throw a garbage bag over a plant and think it would thrive? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I wish we had more time to get into, like, I think especially like our fear of the sun, also like sun exposure and how blocking, especially UVA light in the morning can lead to more sun damage sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But if you're curious about that, please just go read all of Carrie's things and everyone else she refers to. I am curious, how much of your day do you think you spend outside now, knowing all these things?
I call it outside and also outside like time, right? Because I've modified a lot of my living environment and working and travel situations to be more exposed to all the frequencies of light. Mm. And so at a bare minimum on a day when I feel like I'm insanely pressed for time, 2 hours is what I do. On a day where I'm not pressed for time, I mean, 4 to 8 hours outside. So like, but I'm not like just outside, just like, you know, chilling on a beach blanket, right? Yeah. Like I'm either on the drive to school, the windows are down, Mm-hmm. And anytime I'm stopped at a red light, I say sunrise eyes. And like, we look over and we stare at the brightest part of the sky, you know, yeah. Or like in the parking lot of the school, I will stop. And instead of checking my phone for like text messages or work updates in the office setting like this, I'm outside under natural light doing it. Same thing. So anytime I'm driving, right. And then I will always, that UVA walk has been a game changer for me. I try to prioritize that. And
completely,
so if I can
change my life.
Change my life too. I mean, if I can get an hour outside at that time, it's like the best day ever right there.
Yeah.
And then just the remainder of the day, little hits. I take, not right after this, cause I've got a client, but right after that, I'm going to get like a 10-minute hit outside. Then I'm going to come back in and I'll just do that. And 2 hours, I would say, is the bare minimum. Now, knowing what I know, it's like, that's the minimum I need to be able to thrive, I think.
Yeah. And just really quickly, I think to wrap up, because we mentioned this earlier, like, I feel like that's what I, again, love about so much of your work is that it's available, it's inexpensive, and it's relatively easy, right? So touching the earth and in the winter, instead using your hands to touch trees, or going on more walks, sitting outside to work, you know, seeing sunrise. These things are naturally available to us, and they're a little bit harder to access because of modern life. But I think they take such relatively small changes, which is also why I love the title of your podcast, The 2% Better. Like, it's just, they're very small changes that have a huge impact. And like you said, I think that morning, especially like after sunrise, taking that UVA like hour walk is just a complete game changer for my energy.
Okay.
There are 1,000 more things I would love to ask you and talk about and dig into even the weirder stuff, but I know we've got to wrap up. So I'd love to hear just, I think maybe first, is there anyone else that you've been really inspired by lately who is mashing some weird things together that's coming across some interesting stuff that's lighting you up? And
I love the work of Dr. Catherine Clinton. I don't know if you follow her, but she's...
Yeah, I've started following her on Instagram because of you.
You know, she's awesome. She's like, when we had our first conversation, it was like, you're speaking my language, you know, it's like, ha. But the reason why I love her is because she takes quantum and almost puts a poetic spin on it. Like she was a philosophy major. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's really, really interesting. I love the way she kind of puts this. And so it's another great person to follow if you're interested in this.
Love it. Yeah. And of course, again, like if, because there is so much knowledge and data, I highly suggest that you just go follow Carrie on everything that she does. And genuinely, your Instagram videos are like the subscriber videos worth all $5 and more. Like, they're just so fantastic. So encourage people to do that. It's so lovely to be able to, like, once a day just sort of tap in for several minutes just to hear something new and interesting that you're coming across or learning. And then, what are you doing right now that you'd love to promote to people to follow beyond that?
You know, I have finally compiled all of this into a practical course, right? Mm-hmm. I've been dripping it in webinars and workshops, but people were just like, Carrie, just put it all together, right? Yeah. And so I finally did. That course launches November 6th, but it's going to be available as an evergreen course. So you can join anytime. Nice. I am going to kind of gather cohorts, I think, periodically, because it's nice to work with peers for those who like that process. Yeah. And it literally goes over all this, but it's, you know, there is some science, because if you know me, I'm going to inject the science. And I do think, because these strategies are free, easy, simple, we have to know some of the science totally. To motivate ourselves. Yeah. But otherwise it's like, how do I take what Carrie's saying and apply it to my day? Cause I want to feel better. I want to have more energy. I want to sleep better. And so that course right there is probably going to be one of your best bets in order to really dive into this and how to apply it in your life.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it. Well, where can folks find you online otherwise?
You know, Instagram is my hub right now. It's my home. I post there almost every day. And like you said, I do have a subscription platform as well. There, Instagram has that now. For $5 a month, you get to hear me talk about this in little videos. I try to do about 15 videos a month where I go into depth about breathing or earthing or sunlight, just to give people a different perspective and a different way to learn this information. So, either following me on Instagram, become a subscriber, and check out. I've done a lot of podcasts, and check out that course if you're interested.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I was really hoping to get into the breathing stuff. Cause that's really like when I got into Jack Kruse things, I was actually, because I had just been told about jaw surgery, I was like, can I actually find alternative ways to breathe? Meaning, do I not have to go through something quite as invasive as a full jaw surgery and catastrophic to my life? Can I actually find other ways to oxygenate my cells? So got really intrigued by that. So
yeah,
hopefully yeah, another time.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I'd love to come on again, Brandy. That'd be so much fun to talk. That'd be so fun to talk about.
Love it. Okay. Well, I hope your client call is great and the rest of your day is lovely and you get as much outdoor time as possible.
Same to you. Get outside, enjoy it. I would love to see the scenery that you have by your house. It sounds awesome.
Wasn't all of that so interesting? I'm just obsessed with Carrie's work. It has just been affecting so much of my daily lived life, right? Actually, this morning, even the day I'm recording this, I slept terribly last night. My energy was just awful this morning. And I was sitting here literally editing this episode, and I was thinking about everything Carrie was saying about coherence and how sound even bothers us. And I was sitting in my office, and outside my office, there was a couple guys who were, doing leaf blowing out here next to my, in the parking lot outside my window. And it was so loud, I could feel my body start to get agitated. I was actually like, I was getting kind of angry, and I could see when something wasn't working with editing, I was like hitting my desk, sort of slamming my hand on my desk. And I was just getting so frustrated. And I thought, this isn't exactly what we're talking about, right? And so it was later in the day than I normally go on my morning walk. It was probably around 10. I usually leave around 8 to go on my walk, but I knew I had a bit of time to get some key UVA morning sunlight. And so I took my car and I went, nearby a trail I walk relatively often, and I walked further than I expected to walk. My energy was incredible. I actually, I remember recently telling my biological dentist that, he asked me what health would mean to me. Like, what would it look like for me to be healed? And my response to him was, well, if I could run, that to me would be the symbol that so much had changed. My adrenal fatigue had changed, my structural problems had changed, et cetera, et cetera. And so here I am on this walk, and I think I've said it before a couple of times, or even in this episode with Carrie, right? I mentioned that I'd run recently, but on this run, I ran even more than normal. I ran 4 times total over the course of the hour and 15 minutes. And it's not a huge distance, but I'm running more than I have in years. That's a lot for me. And that's a lot for people who experience chronic illness and adrenal fatigue and such. And I'm telling you, sunlight and also breathing, I'm reading and learning a lot more about how breathing affects our health. I'm about to finish the book Breath by James Nestor. And, in it, he talks about nose breathing rather than mouth breathing. And I was making sure on this run to breathe through my nose. And I was also doing the I was trying as much as possible to breathe in for 5.5 seconds-ish and breathe out for a full 5.5 seconds. Also, and that long exhale is, part of what he talked about. And I think it actually did help me, like he writes about, extend the period of time I was able to run. And by the time I got back in the car, I sat down and I looked in the mirror and my face was barely red. Here I was on this later in the day walk. It had gotten warmer. So not only was it, we had crossed over into when UVB was available by the time my walking was done. So it was hotter than normal. I was out in the sun for probably 30 minutes, which is also longer than I typically stay in the sun. But I knew because of Carrie's work that because I had spent so much morning time in that UVA hour that I was a bit protected. And I also know because of her work and the circadian app that I was a bit more protected because it's a little bit later in the year. So it's getting close to winter. So it takes a bit more time for the sun isn't as strong, right? And so I knew I could be out in the sun a little bit more. And then I also ran. And, I remember as a kid running, I so often just got so red-faced. I was so embarrassed when I was younger to run in front of people because I was just so red in the face and I was, sweating and huffing and puffing. And here I am after, with all this chronic illness and adrenal issues and, having all this terrible sleep lately, my insomnia in some ways has actually come back in different ways. And I do think a lot of that is still related to my breathing that I'm working on. and the, you know, potential jaw surgery and everything else that Carrie and I discussed. And, but like, I'm sitting here in my, you know, my driver's seat of my car, looking at myself at 41 years old, and my face is barely red. I'm barely sweating. I look healthy, and it just, it blows my mind. So I think there's just such legitimacy to this work. Like I said, you know, there is so much science behind it, but in my experience, it has proven itself to be true over and over in the last few months. So all that being said, please find Carrie, like we said, at all the places she mentioned, by checking out the description of the show in whatever player you're listening on, Apple, Spotify, whatever, or by going to the show notes on my site at thisplusthat.com/episodes, including that course that Carrie mentioned. I'm hoping that I get this published before the cohort, the first cohort, launches on November 6th, 2022. So be sure and find that if you're interested. And everything else that we talked about, all of the references like Joe Dispenza and, you know, James Nestor and all that, I have in those show notes as well. So go find those there if you heard anything that would be interesting to check out. And thisplusthat.com is also where you can sign up for the This Plus That newsletter, like I said in the intro, where you'll get more behind the scenes related content and personal insights from me, including updates on all of the new stuff I'm doing, like the community ecotone and the creative coaching that I'm offering. And, you know, last regular things, if you feel grateful for this work, you can drop me a tip or buy me a book by going to my website and just clicking on, now it's under the About folder in the navigation. And whether you support me financially or not, you get equal access to all of my content. I like to do work out of the gift as much as possible. And I don't subscribe. I'm not going to guarantee I do that forever, but I, as much as possible, want to work out of the gift. And it is a gift to me when you not only listen to the show, but also share it with all of your friends, share it on social media, tell other people about it, respond to me about it, write me an email about whatever is exciting to you. I love hearing back from people. Or even on my website now, I have, you know, video asks available where you can actually even talk to me and I'll reply back to you in like live form in a personal message. So please do that. It's a gift to me when I hear from you. Truly, it keeps me doing this work, which has been honestly kind of hard lately and all of my health issues, if you've heard my latest episode. So thank you so much. I'm so continuously grateful for any of you who reach out to me and who find value in this show. So thank you. And until next time.